across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Monday, August 21st, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening. Across the Civic Media Radio Network or the Civic Media app or by podcast, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. For the next 2 hours, we welcome you to the State of Wisconsin Sense. This is where we unpack the news, where the spin gets unspun, and where we make the big issues uncomplicated. Here's what's on tap for a busy, busy Monday. In a few minutes, Sherita Booker with the most viewed stories on Up North News' social media sites over the past week. Then we'll explain how there's about to be a big new lawsuit challenging the legality of the voucher school system in Wisconsin, and why a small Northwoods brewery might be the thing that stops a multi-billion dollar drain on Wisconsin taxpayers. At 6:30, Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us, along with a fellow OBGYN in Ohio, to talk about that recent constitutional referendum in Ohio and how it leads into the next big event, a November referendum on protecting women's abortion care rights and what this could all mean here in Wisconsin. Kristen will hang around for today's history lesson and music break. We'll be joined in our second hour by Up North News reporter Selena Heller to hear about her recent stories for us. Then at 7:30, it's Motherhood Monday. Kate and Nicole from Motherhood for Good will be here, along with State Assembly Rep Christina Shelton of Green Bay. We spoke to Representative Shelton last week about attending a national convention for conservative legislators, something she is definitely not. Today, she and Kate and Nicole will be on a back-to-school theme for busy parents like themselves. Terry Bell will be here, Civic Media's news director, with three things to know to start the week. We'll have the weatherology forecast from meteorologist Jennifer Vucicki, a look at the Brewers' weekend series in Texas, and the Packers' preseason game against the Patriots. So much to do here, and you can be a part of it all. Along the way, you can call or text the studio at 844-967-2789, or you can email us, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. You can put a comment on our live video feeds on Facebook, or you can text us on the Civic Media app. We will tell you much more about what all is coming up in just a sec here, but first let's say good morning to Aaron Zommers down at the Civic Media Control Center down there in Madison. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You made that trip up to Manitowoc over the weekend for, it was your sister's 21st birthday, right?
Yes, my youngest sister is now 21 years old.
Oh, okay. How did that go?
It was fun. Made me feel old, but we didn't go nuts or anything. I had one gluten-free beer because we bought some of that because she has to be gluten-free, you know, for her to try. She didn't even end up trying it because she had some other stuff and wanted to take it really easy, having never had alcohol before. Because she was
her.
A good girl and did not drink underage.
Because, look, we know about Wisconsin's drinking culture, and oftentimes we make light of it, even though it can be a very serious matter. And I have simply, as a newsman, read too many stories about young people dying on their 21st birthday from alcohol poisoning. Their friends, you know, pressure them into lining up 21 shots or things like that. So when I now hear stories like that about your sister and more responsibly celebrating a 21st birthday, I feel better that Wisconsin won't always be bogged down with as many alcohol-related problems as we have. So good for her.
Yeah, I hope that that's the trend. Although, I will say, you don't have to take it so far to the other extreme as she did. She only did for health reasons. You don't have to have like a quarter of a seltzer to be drinking responsibly.
No, not at all. It's, again, all things in moderation, if you will. Now, there are some things I would like to not have to enjoy in moderation. And in this case, I'm switching the topic to roasted chicken. And you're in Manitowoc County, your hometown, so you know all about good roasted chicken.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm up in Rice Lake over the weekend where my wife was working. And we've been to Lehman Supper Club up there, you know, many times over the years. We lived in Rice Lake for a year right after college. I worked at a radio station there. So we're familiar with it. But there was just something yesterday about the day getting into the supper club environment, you know, sitting in the lounge where it's a little darker. So you've left behind you the heat, the sunshine and everything. And to have roasted chicken on an early Sunday afternoon, family style, so you get this big bowl of mashed potatoes, a bowl of, you know, half cobs of corn with all kinds of butter. I mean, you can't do moderation when it comes to roasted chicken and buttered corn on the cob and mashed potatoes, can you?
You can't. You just can't, nor would you want to.
No. It was such a treat. So that was one of the highlights of the weekend. The other is the church that I attended nearby Cameron. It was the annual Blessing of the Animals. And so it was an outdoor service. Everybody brings their pets, mostly dogs, though there was a chicken in a clear backpack. Let me say again, somebody brought their pet chicken in a clear backpack. That's awesome.
I've never seen that, let alone in church.
I know. So our pastor, Ned Lenhart, who's a friend and neighbor of mine, waves over to me and says, we're going to set up two stations. You're going to do the other. So I was in charge of blessing some of the pets. And so I, of course, brought Sherry up with me because she loves all dogs, and gave her the treat jar so that, you know, they sit still, they get a little blessing, and then Sherry got to give every dog a treat. I mean, many gold points for the husband here for bringing her up for that.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was just awesome. We didn't even get to more stuff like the Women's World Cup over the weekend. I actually watched that championship game. I was up early enough. And a tropical storm drenching Southern California. I mean, honestly, what else? Well, a lot else, and we're going to cover it all in just a bit here. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin, when you're here, you're up north. We'll be right back.
To make someone happy, make just one someone happy.
Jimmy Durante. He and others were on top of the album chart this week in 1993. How could that be? Well, if you're familiar with the movie Sleepless in Seattle, then you know why. The soundtrack was number one on the album chart this day in 1993. We'll have more of today's history lesson and music news coming up in just a bit. 6 a.m. temperatures include 62 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 59 in Amory, Madison coming in at 63, La Crosse 69, Hayward it's 54 degrees right now, Wausau 60, and Green Bay 59 degrees. And whatever the temperature, I'll tell you this much, we don't have tropical storms blowing over us like Southern California, and an earthquake. They had a 5.1 earthquake as well. Didn't cause any major damage, but sure, what else could you add to the mix there? I don't know what you can say about the Brewers. The 1987 club had the nickname Team Streak, but these guys are not unfamiliar with the term. They just finished a 9-game road trip, all streaks. They won all three against the Chicago White Sox. They lost all three in LA against the Dodgers, the leaders of the National League Central. Then they go to Texas and they sweep all three games from the American League West leading Rangers. And the Bats, which were comatose last week, came to life in the Texas heat. After scoring only three runs in the three games in Los Angeles, the Brewers scored 21 runs over the three games in Texas. And how to explain the way the Brewers own Max Scherzer. He is an instant first ballot Hall of Fame pitcher. And yet they chased him after only 3 2/3 innings yesterday, and they are 3-0 against him so far this season. Baseball is just funny that way. They're off today, back home now, for games tomorrow evening and Wednesday afternoon against the American League Central Division leading Minnesota Twins. And the Green Bay Packers preseason game was suspended in the fourth quarter after New England Patriots rookie cornerback Isaiah Bolden was carted off the field with an apparent neck injury. He was evaluated and released from a Green Bay hospital and tweeted that he is doing well. Right now on Up North News Radio, it's time to visit with our social media director, Sherita Booker. She takes care of all manner of stories and posts them at the Up North News Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and more. Sherita, how are you?
Good, Pat. How are you?
Very good. As we get going into the weekend here, I can't help but notice that it takes all kinds. All kinds of people have all kinds of different hobbies and activities that they like to do. Chainsaw carving's not mine, but there are people who have this amazing talent, and they make some really cool things. And folks around Eau Claire got a taste of that not too long ago, and that post has been very well received. Tell us about it.
The U.S. Chainsaw Sculpture Championship was held in Eau Claire last week, and the best chainsaw carvers from around the world came to compete. And one person representing Milwaukee named Michael Kowepel was there, and he had an amazing carving. It was like four different animals he did, and the amount of time and tediousness it took to make that, he is very talented. That post had almost 2,000 likes and over 100 comments. Lots of people were wishing him luck. Judy Fowler said, "Wow, you certainly have a gift." Another commenter, Aaron Pauser, said, "Wish I had some of those in my front yard."
Yeah, because it's one thing to you make it and then, you know, you can sell these things or, you know, do whatever else you want with them. Again, like any other piece of artwork, it just is a matter of mastering your tools. And was this, I think this was Selena Heller video that we got from her initially. So, yeah, you've definitely got to head to our social platforms and take a look at all the different, every one of these sculptures is something, they look to be about, you know, 6 to 8 feet tall. And just have so much detail on them. So don't take our word for it here on the radio. Go to our social media and take a look at some of these things because they are just so super impressive. All right, our next one, we occasionally will run these stories about, you know, some of the wealthiest people in Wisconsin, different individuals that stand out for different reasons. And in part, they're based on other lists. Forbes did a list and it dealt with America's richest self-made women. And of course, like anything else, there's a Wisconsin tie-in.
Yep. So not only did three Wisconsinites make that list, Diane Hendricks was number one. She owns ABC Supplies and she has a net worth of $15 billion. Also coming in at number three was Judy Faulkner. She's the CEO of Epic Systems and she has a $7.4 billion net worth. And coming in at number 72 was Pleasant Rowland, the founder of American Girl Collection with a net worth of $350 million. That post had almost 1,000 likes on Instagram and over 60 comments, most of them referring to Hendricks. One Flying Lion commented, "She has helped the city of Beloit transform and gives back to the community. Proud to have her in Wisconsin." And Kevin 4D said, "From her late husband, just to be clear," which is he's referring to how she became wealthy because her husband passed away and she got the money from it. So
yeah, and there's definitely this division of, you know, the division of, or the definition rather of self-made, you know, but it is one thing to inherit it. It's another thing to then take that inheritance and continue to grow the company. And I honestly could not say, you know, what she has done with ABC Supply since taking, you know, sole ownership of it. We have mentioned Diane Hendricks a lot because of her basically the millions that she's given to Republican and conservative candidates and causes over the years. We don't talk as often about the Faulkners, Judy Faulkner, who has made donations on the Democratic side of the ledger as well. In both cases, if we had that amount of money, literally billions of dollars, I could see us supporting causes as well. But yeah, Diane Hendricks definitely high up on the list and definitely grabs a lot of comments for the, not just for the philanthropy in the community, but for the, you know, the right-wing causes and candidates that she donates to. So that's why you got so much engagement on that front. Last but not least, back on the lighter side of things, a bed and breakfast. And you keep in mind, bed and breakfast, it doesn't say bed and breakfast in a house. It just says bed and breakfast any place. Sherita, where else can you get a bed and breakfast?
You can get a bed and breakfast on H. Frain. Yes, believe it or not, located in the town of Trago. So that train line also offers a variety of experiences, including wine and cheese rides, a family pizza train, a Santa train, a dinner train. But people love the bed and breakfast train. So we had over 100 shares on just that on Facebook and almost 400 likes. Zena Blom commented, just did this ride this past weekend. We loved it and enjoyed all the history shared during the event. And Jim Ramath said, had a fantastic time when we did it. Regular sleeping rooms were tight, but a fun experience. Funky style beds.
How about you? Would you do something like that?
Absolutely. But you know, I have never been on a train.
Never at all?
Never. No.
Oh, well, I guess I shouldn't really be surprised, but check this out. Our honeymoon was on a train.
Really?
Yes, it was on the Amtrak Empire Builder from St. Paul to Seattle. And then from Seattle, we went up to Victoria, and we were going to, we went to the World's Fair, which was in Vancouver back then in 1986. And yeah, it was a great train ride. You have this big lounge car with a, you know, big glass domed roof, so you can see everything. You see the mountains and the plains and everything else. And it really was. It was a wonderful trip. I would highly recommend it. Yeah, it's a little cramped, but again, it's a train. But I also have to add, Sharita, the whole reason that I suggested it wasn't necessarily for the romance, but back then I was afraid to fly. So I just kind of threw it out that way. Sherry went along with it, and we ended up having just the best time. So I mean, you're not that far from the Amtrak station down there. I mean, even if you just take it down to, we've taken it down to Chicago to go see, you know, shows down there. So we've got to get you to do that sometime. Take the camera along, and we'll get your first impressions of taking the train.
Definitely. And I thought the same thing. Like, if I do take the train, why not to Chicago where all the traffic is and I don't have to worry about parking?
Yeah. Yeah. Or get on it the other way, and you'll go through the Dells and through La Crosse, and, you know, make your way up to the cities, and, you know, maybe we'll meet at Mall of America or something. You never know.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
All right. Thanks, Sharita, so much. Again, everything that she does, you find on our various social media sites. Search for Up North News WI, by and large, to find what we do. Thanks, Sharita. Have a great day.
You too.
There will be a major lawsuit coming up challenging Wisconsin's voucher school program, something that started as a limited experiment in one city but has become a Frankenstein monster, an existential threat to public education, and an inexcusable drain on Wisconsin taxpayers. Now, some note that this has already been tested in court, and yes, it was upheld once upon a time because it was a limited experiment in one city, restricted to low-income families, and the voucher was worth $2,500. It's now been more than 30 years. The program covers the entire state, and I doubt there's a public school district in Wisconsin that hasn't been financially impacted by a program that this past school year alone cost you and me $443 million, with an average voucher cost of about $9,000, while state spending on the average public school student was about $2,000 less than that per pupil. In short, taxpayers may not know it, but they are paying for two parallel school systems in Wisconsin, increasingly for the benefit of wealthier families whose children were already going to private school, but now you get to subsidize more of it. And believe me, this would all be a moot point if private, usually religious voucher schools were doing substantially better than public schools. They're not. It's not even close. Not that we can know for sure, since private voucher schools don't have the same core educational standards, reporting standards, transparency, and the obligation to provide special needs students with basic services. The investigative news site Wisconsin Watch back in May reported on how voucher schools also find ways around the rules so they can discriminate against LGBTQ students using their religious tenets as a reason, even though the voucher program was defended in court because the schools portrayed themselves as, well, schools, rather than arms of an established church. So, needless to say, the grounds have existed for another legal test. But two things had to happen first. Someone had to be willing to raise enough money for what's sure to be an expensive fight against wealthy interests. There's no Diane Hendricks or Dick Uihlein writing checks on the progressive sides of things. Second, Wisconsin voters needed to put an end to 15 years of extreme right-wing political control of the state Supreme Court. Voters have taken care of the latter. Now the Minocqua Brewing Company Super PAC is stepping up to fund the former. I have no idea whether a single lawsuit will be enough to give Wisconsin taxpayers the gift of funding only one school system. I do know that if a lawsuit is successful, this current legislature, in power only because of rigged maps, will try to find some other way to attack public education, from kindergartners all the way to the University of Wisconsin system. But maybe the rigged maps protecting them from taxpayer accountability won't be around a whole lot longer either. And if that happens, keep in mind that private and religious schools will still exist. There will still be school choice. There will be scholarships. There just won't be the multi-billion-dollar drain that's existed for decades because of the selfishness of a powerful few. Imagine how many fewer tax-increasing referendum battles will be dividing communities if an entire community can focus on making its hometown public schools the very best they can be for our kids. Coming up next, we will have Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Dr. Amy Burkett from Ohio on what's happening over there to protect women's health care rights. Back after this, you're up north. You don't own me. I think this is the official, you now know what we're going to talk about when we play Leslie Gore, right, Dr. Lyerly?
I love this song. And wasn't it cool when you listen to the Quincy, or when you watch the Quincy Jones documentary, to hear the whole tie-in with Quincy Jones and Leslie Gore and just the, you know, the setting and
so yeah, cool. I did not even get to that part that over the weekend I had a little spare time, and so I watched the 2018 documentary about Quincy Jones on Netflix. Highly recommend it. And yes, how Leslie Gore was one of his kind of discoveries and shepherded her and all of her talent through four number one hits, including that one that we play occasionally to remind ourselves that the battle goes on, shall we say, against certain folks in certain places. And that's not just Wisconsin, but also in places like Ohio. And Kristen, that's where you found our next guest, a fellow OBGYN from the Buckeye State.
Yeah, Dr. Burkett and I found each other, I would say. So we both serve the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists as district legislative chairs. There are 12 of us around the country. We put our heads together and we try to make sure that we are bringing the voices of our members forward so we can take really good care of our patients. And Amy has been fighting the good fight in Ohio, which has been in the news lately with this huge victory. Amy, we're so excited to have you here to tell us a little bit about what you've done so far and then what's on the horizon for Ohio. So welcome.
Yeah. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me. I am very proud and honored to be a part of the work that's going on in Ohio, defeating issue one in our August special illegal election that cost the taxpayers $20 million was a fantastic moment for us. And as part of ACOG and as part of the Ohio Physicians for Reproductive Rights, who have been really pushing some of the amendment work. And we're on to November. We are slated to be on the ballot for Reproductive Rights Amendment to protect all reproductive rights from contraception to fertility treatments and, of course, abortion, because abortion is healthcare.
We have mentioned a couple of times on the program here, but again, for folks who missed the background, there was and is this effort underway to protect women's health care rights in November, and it would have only needed a majority vote to pass. And so conservatives quickly put together a special election in August to raise the threshold to pass a constitutional amendment, even though they themselves got rid of special elections some time back, but they broke the rules for themselves in order to try to break the rules for the Constitution. But that did not stand, and that leads to this question, Dr. Burkett. It's the turnout was amazing, especially for a summer election like this. But I think that it is fair to say that there are people who are going to vote against you in November, but voted with you because they saw what a blatant attempt it was to rig the way the rules are. So if you accept that premise, and you don't have to, but if you do, how much tougher does your job become between now and November?
I accept that premise that, yes, there are people who voted against issue one, but will also vote against the reproductive rights amendment in November. However, I think that when you look at the numbers, that there's a reason they chose 60%, right? In Ohio, even before the Dobbs decision, women supported reproductive rights at greater than 50%. We usually hover around 57 to even 61%, depending on whose poll you look at and what question they ask. And so why I think we have work to do in pointing out some of the misinformation that's going around from the opposition. I do think that when women listen to the physicians and really look at this very simple, less than a page, I think it's like 271 words, amendment, and see, it just protects their rights.
I have not met a human being, a woman, a child, a man, anybody who has said, you know what, I would like the politician to make my healthcare decisions for me. I mean, and that's really what's on the ballot, not only in Ohio, but across the country. Amy, you had mentioned that this referendum cost $20 million to the people of Ohio.
Yeah. And that's what they put in the budget. But yeah, $20 million of your tax dollars. Imagine what you could do with $20 million of tax dollars to feed kids, to improve the school districts, to, you know, there's just so many other things that I could have seen us spending $20 million on, that it was disheartening to see that money wasted by a political majority who's actually in power in the same way it sounds like you guys have with some gerrymandered districts. And so women in Ohioans deserve better than this. And I think a citizen initiated, physician led, really amendment is what we need, that so that people can use their voice to tell the politicians they're done being told what kind of health care they can and cannot have.
So what's next? You've had this giant victory. You've got momentum. You know that this constitutional amendment is on the horizon. How do you start channeling your energy from here?
Obviously, a lot of fundraising, which fortunately I show up and just talk, because we have a great team of people with Ohioans United for Reproductive Freedom. And then just getting out the correct information of what the amendment does and doesn't do. So doing as many articles, invited to speaking engagements. When people invite us, we find a physician to go and give that voice. And so I expect to be very busy in the coming months. I think October will probably be the hugest push. But even now, leading up to it, just getting people out and continuing the momentum we had from August and the signature collection. I mean, this has actually been like going on actually almost, it'll be exactly a year because the started last November. And so we've been like go, go, go since then. You have to get the language right. You have to get the signatures. You have to get through the lawsuits. We got sued twice by the opposition. And we're unanimously decided by the Ohio Supreme Court that, in fact, the amendment had been done right. But there's all these little roadblocks for something they keep saying people don't want. And the reason they put the roadblocks up is because they say one thing, but they know another thing, right?
That's true. And we in Wisconsin know a thing or two about collecting signatures, having been able to successfully, you know, put a governor up for recall at some point. But Wisconsin does not have the same kind of initiative and referendum that there is in Ohio, Minnesota, some other states. And so we can't put something together from the citizenry level. But, you know, knowing that that's the case, but seeing what you see on the ground in what is fairly indisputably a red state in most other political ways, what kind of advice or encouragement would you give to the voters and the people in Wisconsin who want to try to, you know, protect and frankly restore women's health care rights?
Well, it's unfortunate that all the states don't have the advantage we have, right, to have the citizen initiative to change our constitution and to stand up to the politicians. But I would say stand up to the politicians in the way you can. Vote them out. Fix your gerrymandered districts. And even if you do have gerrymandered districts, find people who support what you believe. If you're a physician or you work in healthcare or you see how this affects someone around you, and you can use your voice to let people know why it's important that politicians are not in our exam rooms, that physicians and patients are making decisions about lots of things, but health, obviously for healthcare, but there are other instances where we're seeing a lot of government involvement too. And this is the time where people just need to say, this is my voice and this is what's important to me. It takes longer when you can't do a citizens initiative and change your constitution, but it can be done. And we're doing the same thing. Like, we need to fix our districts too, right? Like, we've been through that and it's going to take time because ultimately the people should be better represented. But we're going to do this for the fix for reproductive rights and continue to work on the others.
And hopefully that momentum will help us solve this gross gerrymandering problem that you alluded to earlier. And we've seen successes in states like Kansas and Montana. They're collecting signatures in South Dakota and Nebraska. So, you know, people are finding their voices. What are you seeing? You're a regular doctor. You see patients. All of this other stuff you do is far above and beyond what your day job is, which is taking care of people in the exam room. What are you hearing from your patients in Ohio?
You know, it was tough. Last year, after the Dobbs decision was released, we immediately then had our attorney general went and got our 6-week abortion injunction lifted. And so we had about 12 weeks where we were under the 6-week ban. And like, I work as an OBGYN hospitalist most of my time. And to tell people who we evaluated and that they were pregnant and had had a contraceptive failure, had an IUD in place, that they could not have a pregnancy termination within this state was devastating. To think about when sick people came in, which, like, how do you call the lawyer? What do you do when, oh my gosh, this is now criminal, because we have a criminal charge attached to it if you don't follow, you know, if you don't meet the medical exception portion of it. And that was scary, and patients were scared, and you're trying to help them find resources for something that's healthcare, and then hoping you don't go to jail for providing healthcare. And not only go to jail, but lose your medical license and lose your ability to vote out the people who are doing this.
So when that happens, obviously these lead to some very rushed and rather intimate conversations with people. But it's conversations that are really getting this work done, because Kristen mentioned Kansas and other red states where it isn't only about women's healthcare rights. But prior to that, the amount of, you know, quote unquote red states that had popular initiatives to accept the Medicaid expansion is quite stunning and encouraging. And then you also see it in referenda about legalizing marijuana. And the point I'm trying to make here is that if you can separate an issue from a political party and just look at the issue on its merits and have the conversations about it and forget if there's a D or an R attached to it, that has to give you some encouragement about where people's values often lie, even if they typically vote in a different way.
100%. I think when people really look at an issue and say, wait a minute, you know, that's not why I voted for that person. And I didn't think they were going to do that, right? I think the Dobbs decision really made people take a look and say, that's not what we thought was going to happen. We didn't think that, you know, we wanted, you know, some of this stuff, but we don't want all of this stuff. We didn't want, you know, women at risk for dying. And so I think that as we see people start to separate out the issues, people to look at not just the D or the R and say, does this person really actually meet my values, that hopefully we'll see people voting for people who meet their values and ignoring, you know, which party affiliation they've been assigned.
And connecting the dots between the decisions that are being made and the voting piece. I think that's one of the things that makes it really hard for regular people. I mean, how many people have you seen? You're a hospitalist, so you don't see people in the clinic. You see people when they actually come into the hospital, like to deliver their baby or they've got a pressing problem. How many people have you seen who really understand what's happening on the political level? They know what's happening in their lives. They know what their needs are, but do they know how their decisions are affecting, do they know how their voting decisions are affecting their actual personal lives?
Well, I think if you look at some of the voting numbers, that there are people who are just so over the system or just don't think that their vote counts, that we don't even get, you know, for a lot of this stuff, we don't get 50% of the people out to vote, let alone 75%. Women have had the right to vote for just over 100 years. Why are we not out every day, you know, every election cycle using that as our power and our voice, right? We're 51% of the people in the country. We got out there and said, these are not my values for my reproductive health. These are not what I want for myself, for my daughter, for my niece. then we could really change things just by showing up to vote for people who support our values, who say, I have the right to contraception. I have the right to abortion for healthcare when I need it. I have the right to fertility treatments without politicians saying what they get to choose.
Exactly. And it's all, again, it all starts with those conversations and letting people know that their vote does have value. Dr. Amy Burkett, thank you so much for joining us from Ohio. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Kristen's going to hang around. We'll have today's history lesson and music break right after this. You're up north. There's the sheriff riding through the desert in blazing saddles on his horse. And there's Count Basie in the orchestra right there in the middle of the tumbleweeds.
I want to dance with you right now, Pat.
Woo! Count Basie was born this day in 1904, passed away in 1984. But I loved seeing him again in that Quincy Jones documentary. But then finding that clip from Blazing Saddles is just the best. All right, welcome to today's history lesson and music break. Let's start with another anniversary of birth. Kenny Rogers passed away in 2020, but he was born this day in 1938 in Houston, Texas, and got his start with the First Edition.
You've painted up your lips and rolled and curled your tinted hair.
I think that's where every impression of Kenny Rogers starts with. You've painted up your lips and rolled... On this day
First
in 18...
Edition, not to be confused with New Edition.
Yes. The first of the Lincoln-Douglas debates was held in Illinois this day in 1858. What would we give for just some civilized debating like that, rather than what we've devolved into? Hawaii...
How would they? Do you remember?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, picking on the old man. That's great.
Mister, I went on my honeymoon on a train because I was afraid of flying. Yep, because trains were the only thing that were available back then.
Wow, you get really brave when you're way down in Arizona. This. President Eisenhower signed the executive order proclaiming Hawaii the 50th state this day in 1959. Another birthday, Jackie DeShannon. Still with us. She's 82 years old, born in Kentucky, and gave us What the World Needs Now and this little ditty.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart.
Yeah, do that, Kristen. Get that sarcasm out of there, okay?
These are like such nice anthems of like hippie niceness.
Well, she wasn't always sweetness and light. Jackie DeShannon also wrote Betty Davis Eyes for Kim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for Kim Carnes. Yep. Let's see. Quite a few birthdays today. Carrie Ann Moss is 56. You remember her from The Matrix. Paul Menard, the race car driver, is 43. The Winklevoss twins, Cameron and Tyler, are 42. And it is Milwaukee Brewers manager Craig Counsell's birthday. He is 53 years old today. And Roger writes in, happy birthday, Sister Jean, the beloved team chaplain for Loyola University Chicago since 1994. She is 104 years old, or 104 years young today, I guess.
Wow.
You could say. Yeah.
Legend.
Yep. It is also the 35th birthday for singer Kacey Musgraves.
You hold tight to your umbrella, well, darling, I'm just trying to tell you that there's always been a rainbow hanging over your head.
Actress Hayden Panettiere is 34 years old today. We already mentioned Sleepless in Seattle topped the album charts this day in 1993. And to 2012 now, Taylor Swift again, who... became the single with the most digital sales for a female artist, with 623,000 copies of We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. This is kind of a Leslie Gore of our time. Maybe, Kristen, as a big Leslie Gore fan?
You know, I kind of love Taylor Swift. I love that she writes her music. I love she's poppy. She's just great.
I remember talking to some folks over the weekend, and it's like, how many songs do you have to like or know before you're considered to be a Swiftie? And so the whole question was, am I a Swiftie? You know, some of us guys in the conversation, like, we had to kind of ask ourselves, like, where are we on that? So
I'm sure there's some sort of internet quiz that you could take to determine whether you're a Swiftie.
If not, there should be. See, you come up with these good ideas, much like the good idea you came up with for bingo cards for Wednesday's debate in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
that was you.
I worked
on that over the weekend, and I'm not quite done yet. But I solicited ideas from the interwebs, and there's a bingo card here that has. And again, these are things the Republican candidates might say Wednesday in Milwaukee. So they might say indoctrination, confiscate guns, cancel culture. But you know, what about, will one of them say Trump can't win in November? And if so, you fill that space. COVID lockdowns, radical CRT, Green New Deal, you know, Dr. Fauci. Oh, Hunter Biden should be the free space, right? Or should it be
woke?
Either one of those could be the free space on the card. So
honestly,
that was
I think most of these are free spaces. Like it's a bingo card. It's a bingo card, and the middle is the one that's not the free space.
That's funny. You know, that's the thing, is it's going to be so cliche that you almost have to do the, not just five in a row, but you have to like fill in your whole card in order to win, because every one of these things is going to get mentioned here. So you mentioned something over the weekend about a map showing maternity care deserts. Mm-hmm. Tell folks what that was about real quick, because then I've got a great response and counter response.
So this was a map that was published from a report that the March of Dimes did, looking at every county across the country, and I focused on Wisconsin, where 12 of our 72 counties are maternity care deserts. There are no hospitals to deliver babies. There are no healthcare providers to care for women who are pregnant. And, you know, if you live in one of these places like Rusk County or Kewaunee County, you have to travel to get even basic care. For those of you who have been pregnant, you know that, especially towards the end of your pregnancy, you're seeing your doctor a lot. This is not convenient. It's not healthy. This is where we see more disparities and, frankly, worse outcomes both for moms and babies with young kids.
And again, you look at this map, and all throughout the areas up north, the 7 congressional district, basically from, you know, Neillsville to near Duluth Superior, you're in a maternity care desert. So of course, one of the, you know, the right wing bloggers had to put up your map, and then put up, and what is Tony Evers doing about this? He's in his second term. And the responses were great, all along the line of, well, he did try to improve infant and maternal health for 3 consecutive budgets, only to have them rejected by Republicans in the legislature. Might you consider reading the news now and then?
Seriously, we have been pushing so hard for extension of postpartum Medicaid that would ensure that people have access to care after the baby comes out, because it takes a year for your body to recover. But the Republicans keep shooting it down. I mean, I frankly, Pat, I don't know what else to do.
Well, to keep putting that up so that when that tired talking point comes up from the right, mm-hmm. you can remind them there has been attempts to make the situation better in Wisconsin. How about you actually care about people rather yep. than, you know, just tax cuts at the very top? So thank you for putting that up. All right. She's going to hang around into the 7 o'clock hour. In fact, I think Selena Heller's. Yeah, there she is. She's going to wave to us there and put the cat's tail down as well. Very ill-timed flick of the tail there. Selena Heller joins us along with Nicole Slavin, Kate Duffy, and State Representative Christina Shelton, all coming up next. You're up north.